nonetheless, you know, I'm involved in developing and investing in technologies which do impact on the capacity to enhance human potential, and have had a long interest in that area, and can bring you our perspective, okay? And when I come to very learned talks about this topic, which I do every now and again, I'm reminded of that adage about the Northern Ireland problem. If you think you understand the Northern Ireland problem, then you don't, right? Now, actually, we've managed to find our way through there to some large extent in the last number of years, so that gives us hope here in this room. And I do think that if you think you understand the ethical issues associated with human enhancement, then you probably don't. Okay, because it's very early, it's very complex. You're going to all agree on that. It'll take some thinking to get it right and for society to get smart about this. But what I'll give you is our perspective, okay? And there's really not a lot new in my talk in terms of, you know, you'll have seen most of the technologies and I've seen some of the arguments before. But there's one or two things here which I want to sort of bring to you, which I think are often missed by the sort of more academic debate in this area, okay? And which really will have a big impact. One, first and foremost, are the motivations of broader society. We as academics, whether we be researching technology or ethics, to some very large extent, our influence on the outside world is time. You know? So really, we have to understand what the big picture is. Right? It's very, very important. Okay? And in that context, the major drivers for innovation at the moment are probably well-being. People want to live healthier lives. They want to live longer lives. And second major driver is creativity. People want to be increasingly creative. And by that I mean most people in this room, and certainly a lot of people in this city and more people in this country, will earn their living through taking information, creating knowledge, and selling that insight. So you really need to enhance your creativity. Okay, that's how you earn your living now. And we're increasingly aware that we want a lifestyle that's in some way sustainable on this planet. So the big drivers for people are they want to live longer, but they want to be healthier for a greater part of that life. They want to be more creative in using information to create knowledge. They want to live a lifestyle that they believe is sustainable for themselves, but increasingly also for their children and their offspring. Okay. These are big drivers. This is what people worry about. Okay, they frankly don't worry about semiconductor circuits, and they don't worry about bioethics. This is what really people worry about. This is what they think about. Okay, and if we look at the innovations that impact on those needs, there are really three key enabling technologies at the moment: biotechnology, nanotechnology, and information communication technology. All of you will be very well aware of many examples of where those technologies have been hugely disruptive. But actually, it's the convergence of these technologies which is really, really going to be disruptive in the future. And why is that? It may even lead to what we might describe as a new epoch, borrowing language from other people. Well, it's because the convergence of these three key technologies are key enabling is offering us the opportunity to master complexity on this planet. And this is one of the big things that underlines the whole enhancement issue. Enhancement is possible because we're learning to master complexity at the biological and other levels. So for example, if we take a picture here of a human sperm, you know, people in this room will be much better aware than I am all the different descriptions that have been throughout the ages of what a sperm is. You know, it was really thought that the sperm grew into the entire human, and so on and so on. So there have been all sorts of different understandings of what the sperm is. But nowadays, this is how we understand the sperm. We can actually see the individual molecules that make up each individual sperm. So here's the rotor. Here's a picture of the molecules that make up the rotor that turn the flagellum in a sperm. So we have unprecedented understanding right down to the atomic level of the structure of all things in this planet. A That's really, really new. That's never happened before. Okay? So first time in human history that you can see the individual atoms and molecules that make up virtually everything on this planet. It's possible to do now. So we can resolve and understand the structure of everything on this planet down to its most fundamental constituents at this stage. That's only happened in the last 20 years. But it's really important. Why? Because we can then build models for function of almost everything there is, in principle. So here's how you take that picture of the motor components that turn the flagellum on a sperm, and you can make a computer simulation, and you can, to some extent, draw a picture of how the thing exists or functions within the human, or within the living entity. And from that structure, detailed insight into structure and function, you can get a blueprint for rational design. So here you can see a little cartoon which says, if you take a protein motor and attach a piece of carbon nanotube to it, we could build something that looks like an artificial sperm. So you can get resolve the structure of everything on this planet at the atomic or molecular level. You can understand how it functions at that level. And in principle, if you can rearrange the atoms and molecules or arrange the atoms and molecules, you can rationally design something that is that or something that's very like that. Okay? And here's a kind of a simulation of what that might be. And in fact, then on the next slide, if it works, you can actually see that device was built in a laboratory and works. So that's a piece of fluorescent carbon nanotube, or fluorescently labeled carbon nanotube, that's rotating on a protein motor. And that is an artificial sperm. Okay? Now, of course, it's not, but it works like one. It, to some extent, even looks like one. And most importantly, it's been rationally designed from detailed insight into the individual structure at an individual atomic and molecular level of that entity, and some blueprint for that device. So, these key enabling technologies, nanotechnology, biotechnology, and information communication technology, are providing us with a set of tools or enablements which allows us to master the complexity of all living things on this planet. We can understand right down to the molecular atomic level how they're built, how they work, and we can even aspire nowadays to building simple versions of them. And you'll all be aware of this sort of minimum genome project and so on that's going on around the place, artificial life forms, quite related in that. And in that case, I think it's that ability to master complexity which is really going to hugely impact on everything, on our experience as humans on this planet over the next number of decades. And one manifestation of that is human enhancement. Okay, because human enhancement is largely possible because we're mastering complexity at that level. Okay, that's where it all comes from. Okay, so one example, or I picked three examples of the enhanced future that arises from mastering complexity. One is artificial intelligence. The other is the enhanced human. And here's one that people don't think about. That's the enhanced environment. Okay? Humans exist in an environment. We can change our experience by changing us and leave the environment the same. Or we can change our experience of life by changing ourselves and the environment remains the same. Or conceivably, we could stay the same, but our environment changes. We'll have a different experience of life in either case. Okay? So one opportunity for enhancing human experience is what we normally refer to as human enhancement. That's changing ourselves. But an equally great opportunity and challenge is changing our environment. Okay, and that's becoming a much greater issue as we realize that our environment is changing without our rational control at the moment, our irrational activity, depending on your point of view. And that's becoming a much greater issue. Right? So I think the whole enhancement issue is going to become a combined view of the enhancement of ourselves and our environment. Okay? Because that's ultimately our experience. Okay? So, if we just look at the one of artificial intelligence, mastering complexity is going to give us a couple of things. It's going to give us massive computational power. Okay, one of the companies we invest in is called D-Wave. D-Wave just produced the first 128-bit quantum computer and demonstrated it at NASA there recently. That device can break any modern encryption regime in seconds. The level of computational power that's coming down the road is absolutely staggering. And we're not talking about Moore's Law, we're talking about a jump to the next level. Okay. Then we have, because we're able to resolve structure and function at increasingly finer and finer scale, even down to the atomic or molecular level within living organisms, we have increasing understanding of the structure and function of the brain, which allows us to make some assumptions about what algorithms, what that architecture does, and what algorithms run in the brain. And it can even, in the same way as we can conceive of a prototype sperm, artificial sperm, we can conceive of a prototype artificial brain, even at this stage. So let me just tell you a little bit about computational power. As most of you are aware, a thing called Moore's Law, which says that the number of transistors on a chip doubles every 18 months, right? This is actually an economic law. What that means is the cost of each processing unit halves every 18 months. That's why every time you go and buy a computer, it's cheaper than the last time you bought it, in real terms, and it does much more, okay? Now, if we look at the progress, okay? So down here in sort of, I love this picture, sort of here, if we look at, so pick out one that most people would know here. It's a PDP-11 on there somewhere. And we did a PhD around the sort of, yeah, and a lot of people here are smiling. We all struggle with that piece of crap on the computer, okay? To be honest, okay? PDP-11, state-of-the-art, okay? It was only somewhere between manual calculation of the processing power of a bacterium, okay? And it was like, you know, there were four guys running it, making a career out of turning it on and off, right? But nowadays, we're up here by 2000 and sort of here, somewhere around here, okay? And now we're sort of at, we have computational power available somewhere around the lizard. But if we look here, okay, it's only another 15 years before the computational power available in a routine machine that you can buy down a PC world will equal the computational power of the human brain. That's going to happen. It's absolutely certainly going to happen. The roadmap is there, companies are working on it, there's really no major issue. Okay? There's a few big technical issues we sort out around here, the so-called red wall, but they're going to make it, pretty sure. And then when quantum computing kicks in after that, you could get massive increases in computational power, even over that again. Right? So computational power needed to emulate the function of a human brain will be available to us within, you know, a couple of decades at the outside. Now, structure and function, it's kind of a pop slide, but anyway, I'll use it anyway. The typical representation of the relationship between a mother and her child is this Renoir painting here, classic representation. Mother and infant, very beautiful image, okay? About 120 years ago, or whatever. This is a modern representation of the same thing. This is an MRI scan, an MRI scan in this case. And the blue region of the brain is the region of the mother's brain that becomes active when she's holding a child who's not her own child. A completely different region of the brain, the red brain, part of the brain, becomes active when she's holding a child who is her own child. So you can tell by scanning a mother's brain whether it's her child or not. Okay? It's very interesting, isn't it? I thought that was fascinating. So that's two equivalent representations, but I make the point here because as the resolution of that structure-function relationship in the brain increases as scanning technology becomes better and better and better, increasingly we're able to resolve the function of brain down to very small numbers of cells for specific things, right? Now that's quite a general statement, but it's definitely, you know, a major trend which is important, okay? As a result of which, it's now possible to posit or to propose architectures for the brain algorithms that run on that architecture. Now, they're very crude. They leave a lot out, okay? But this is inconceivable versus what was possible even a few decades ago. Okay? Now, there's miles to go yet, but it's clear that at some point in the future, there will be a very detailed understanding of what structures in the brain implement, what is the architecture of hidden structures in the brain, and what algorithms they operate, or what things they do in your brain. So, but as I said, there's much to do, so we've decided to use the monkey brain for our VC 2.0 project, but thank you for volunteering, Don, right? So I picked that cartoon up somewhere. Now, in terms of a prototype, the question is, when would you know you'd have an artificial brain? That's a really tricky one, right? Well, you know, the Turing test is the classic answer to that. So Alan Turing is one day, as you all well know in this country, the founder of modern computing, you know, hugely instrumental in winning the Second World War through the Enigma efforts and so on and so on. And just an incredible human being. His answer was, you put the computer and a person behind the screen, you have a conversation with each of them, and if you can't tell the difference, you've got an artificial brain. And, you know, it's a very operational definition, but pretty decent one, I'd say, in the end. And people argue about that all along. Very interesting. I don't know if any of you knew, but he was an incredibly good marathon runner. He finished third, and that picture is him finishing third in the British National Marathon Championships in 50-something. And on the other hand, a very tragic ending. He was exposed in the papers as a homosexual, and he then committed suicide. So, incredible life that man led, right? So, anyway. So, another aspect of mastering complexity is the enhanced human, right? And that comes in a few different flavors, okay? There's physical enhancement, cognitive enhancement, sustained health, and extended lifespan. Right, and there are variations on that. Now, I'm not going to spend long on this because everybody in this room knows more about this than I do, so I'm going to scoot through this quickly, okay? But physical enhancement, let me just give you a few perspectives from the market, as it were, from the investor side. The opportunities are definitely diet, exercise, drugs, prosthetics, implants. Big driver for this whole initiative is the Future Soldier Program in the US. They're investing massive amounts of money into physical enhancement. And the reason for that is, basically, if you can have your armed forces working at optimum capacity for 48 hours, no effects of fatigue, no error judgment, none of that, you can win any war. That's the kind of one of the current rationales for investment of finances in the US. And you might say, well, that's dreadful, that's ridiculous, whatever it is. But the spin-off from that is going to be in the market in 15 to 20 years. There's no two ways about that. Because it always has happened. And there's no reason to expect that it won't. So whatever the lads are getting up to in Brookhaven, Sandia, all that stuff, it'll be in boots in 15 to 20 years. Tell me I'm wrong. It always is. Okay? I mean, I used to build satellite. I used to build spectrometers and went up on Mariner 5 and stuff like that. That's what I did my research in. The stuff we got from that, we got from Lockheed. It's the same stuff that was on the spy satellites 15 years ago, okay, or 20 years ago. You can buy it in Radio Shack now, okay? That's what happened, okay? So this stuff won't be in Radio Shack. It could be in good nutrition or boots. Some of it will be, that's for sure. You can absolutely bet your bottom dollar on that. Cognitive enhancement. It's very interesting what's happening here. We had reference to smart drugs, Ritalin. You know, something like 15% of Ivy League university students in the US are abusing cognitive drugs. And 20% of them stole it from another student. That was in the Demos report, if any of you read that. Very interesting. So I attribute that. I found it very interesting. But here's another sort of cognitive enhancement product that's really big in the market is the Nintendo brain games. Intelligent gaming, huge industry, right? This brain age stuff on the Nintendo DS Lite or whatever your kids have. Actually, this is Nintendo, an incredible company. They doubled their market size by making a pink Nintendo, which girls bought.
right?
Very smart. Really very smart. Okay? And dog tender and all that stuff. And the next thing they did was, well, we're going to increase our market by going after people who are over 20. Right? This game here, the typical profile for a game which enters the market is it maxes its sales in the first month, just goes straight down. Within 12 months, they pull it. They don't sell anything. That game has increased its sales every single month for 2 years. It's the only game, computer game in history that's ever done that. Okay? The demographic pull on that is absolutely staggering. But here's the key issue. You know, cognitive enhancement, physical enhancement is all about the soldier of the future at the moment. But, you know, who's to say that we don't want our air traffic controllers not to be fatigued? We don't want our surgeons not to be fatigued? And so on. We're talking about future scholars here. We're talking about, you know, high-end students in the US who are enhancing their cognitive function. People who are in older age groups who are, you know, deferring the effects of aging in their brain by taking certain types of cognitive exercise. You know, there are some benefits there. There are clearly some challenges too. Here's, I think, where, you know, a lot of that stuff doesn't really present us with a lot of difficulty. This is where the one I think is really going to be the big one. Okay? Sustained health. Why? Because it's so expensive. Okay? Hugely expensive. You extend lifespan by, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, by whatever means. Or you increase the expectation among everybody in this society that they should be healthy for a greater part of their life. The expenses associated with that are staggering. Okay? So, for example, you talk about, you know, all sorts of replacement parts. So when we get older, what's the problem? Well, our parts basically stop working. Our organs have a lifespan, they stop working. So the big sort of push in sustained health is replacement parts. I mean, you see an artificial pancreas here, which is kind of a lipoidal structure with some insulin-producing cells inside, and, you know, it's a kind of a prototype artificial pancreas. That's the sort of thing that people are doing. And many more of you would be aware of much more of that than I would. So sustained health is another big area, and replacement parts are one of the big drivers there. It's a lot of investment in that area. And extended lifespan. So you've got your 136-year-old mouse, genetically engineered to lower its metabolic rate so it lives longer. Right? And, you know, I'm not even going to go there because I can't even comprehend the bioethical issues associated with, you know, extending lifespan and so on and so on. They're huge. But there's a lot of research in this area, and I think it'll happen in some shape or form. Okay, so, and then you have this famous quote from Henri de Grey, the first person to live to age of 1,000 may have already been born. Now, I'm not sure any of us believe that, but it's certainly going into a few grants. Okay, so, no harm there, right? And, you know, he's making very serious progress. I mean, people do discount Henri de Grey, but, I mean, he's a very, very serious academic and does very good work, right? Now, the way he packages and presents it to the wider world, we may or may not agree with. But the biochemistry he does is very good biochemistry. And the understanding and insights he's developed into the process of aging are really important. Right? And they will underpin developments. So the other thing I said to you was, you know, the enhanced future, where we've got artificial intelligence, physically and cognitively enhanced humans, all of that means nothing if our environment's in the toilet. You know, if we can't live on this planet, okay? So the big enhancement of the future is going to be the enhanced environment. It's going to be as big as enhanced human or artificial intelligence because, you know, we're really facing some major issues now. Let me just sort of outline them for you. Everybody talks about global warming, you have all the science and so on, but the bottom line is you burn hydrocarbons, combust them in air, combine them with oxygen, produce CO2. CO2 traps heat in the planet from the sun. And here's, you know, a very graphic representation. Here's a US national park. Here's where the glacier was 100 years ago. Here's where it is now. The planet is getting warmer. Okay, and there's no two ways about that. Now, it's not all bad news because we have moved from burning high carbon content fuels like wood and coal to increasingly lower carbon content fuels like oil and gas. But ultimately where we need to get is to burn no carbon fuels. And the only one we can really think of at the moment
is hydrogen.
Okay, so we want to combust hydrogen with oxygen.
We combine hydrogen with oxygen, produce water and energy.
That's the ideal objective, okay? Zero carbon emissions and plenty of energy, and water is a byproduct. Not too bad. And, you know, people are building models for the hydrogen economy where, you know, you take water and you use energy to split it, produce hydrogen, which can be used to run cars, can operate fuel cells, and the hydrogen can also come from biomass. And you can also have solar, which produces the hydrogen, can also be used to heat residential areas, wind, and so on. Okay, so there's a whole vision for a hydrogen economy. But that is definitely a long way away. Okay? So in the intervening period, it's nuclear.
It may or may not be. You've got a choice.
It's nuclear combined with solar, wind, geomass, geothermal and biomass, okay? Because that's the only way we can meet our energy needs in the interim. And if you look at the price of uranium, the market is definitely betting on that. Okay? Price of uranium is basically growing exponentially. That's actually added 8 hours, but twice again over that. Okay? And this brings us to the key kind of dilemma in sort of environmental enhancement. And it's very analogous to the debate for human enhancement. You know, do we do something like use nuclear power, which will mean that we don't have to burn all that coal and oil and damage the environment, but run the risk of a dangerous, locally dangerous technology like nuclear energy and the waste associated with it? Or do we get into the game of climate engineering, which is reversing the effects of the global warming that's already happened through various interventions? And you can take your choice. Mine would be I'd much rather have a nuclear plant than somebody guessing what's going to happen in the environment on a very large scale by doing experiments just for the time being. But if we do go this route, this is where massive computational power comes in. Because this is only a viable option, which we may need to go to, but it is only a viable option if you can really simulate the climate in a very serious way. So, and then you have Al Gore there. Humanity is sitting on a ticking time bomb. Fair enough. So, almost finished now. So what I said was, look, you have to think about drivers, well-being, creativity, and sustainability. Convergence of key technologies, and as investors we see that as an opportunity. Okay, we're fundamentally optimistic, right? So, you know, we have to be. We make so many mistakes. So, in terms of well-being, where do we see the opportunities in sort of medium term? From down to this kind of 60,000 foot view, where are we investing our money at the moment? Well, effective drugs, okay? Smart medical devices, mobile patient. Most people's healthcare will be increasingly delivered to them through their mobile phone in some shape or form. So let me just show you one of the things that we're into at the moment. Intrapace, one of our companies based in California. This is a gastric pacemaker. So as you're well aware, obesity is a growing problem in all developed economies, but particularly in the US and increasingly in Europe. And this is a device which is implanted into your stomach. It's wireless. You can was it from Bluetooth and so on. And essentially you sit down with your clinician and you say, I'm allowed to eat between 8 and 9, 1 and 2, and 5 and 6 in the evening, and I'd like to eat a certain amount. And that all gets programmed into the device. And if you try to do anything else, it applies a voltage to the wall of your stomach, makes you feel really ill. And the more you eat, the bigger the voltage gets, right? Now, this is really a form of human enhancement. Why? Because some people have got into such, you know, poor eating habits and a poor lifestyle that goes with that, that the brain chemistry has altered around their nutrition. And really, they're almost incapable of doing anything about it, right? You know, people who get this barometric surgery, get their stomach, you know, reduced the size of a walnut, most of them just go drinking milkshakes in McDonald's all day. They don't lose any, a lot of them, okay? It's all about brain chemistry and behavior. So this is a form of human enhancement, right? But at the same time, you can take a view whether you think it's a good one or not. I mean, my father all thinks it's a shame. You know, he says, well, what's wrong with willpower and all that sort of stuff? On the other hand, if you're morbidly obese and you can't work and you can't earn a living for your children, you know, this isn't a bad option. right? You know, you have willpower to change, but just not the particular willpower to overcome your brain chemistry. So maybe we shouldn't judge. In terms of creativity, well, the big thing is to, you know, go from the sort of information age to the knowledge age, hopefully to the wisdom age, right? So knowledge is the synthesis of information, wisdom is the synthesis of knowledge, right? So increasingly, you know, we want more and more computational power to do that. So, you know, continue Moore's law, move from silicon-based electronics to plastic-based electronics so that electronics become cheap and disposable so they can be everywhere. Okay, everything has electronics in it and is wired in some way. And then also, I'll leave that point as a rather esoteric point for the fab community. And I mentioned this company before, this is D-Wave. It's a company which is, you know, really cracking into the quantum computing problem. And that will give you, you just cannot believe what that will do for computational power. It's just going to completely revolutionize it. This demonstration that they did at the Museum for Computer Museum in Silicon Valley, they did it, was on all the networks and so on. It was so controversial that NASA had to issue a press release saying, yes, they had independently verified the device. Right? And the big issue is, will this get out or not? You know, because all the big governments will hate the idea of this getting out, because all their encryption algorithms are gone. Okay? So that's going to be one of the big tensions here. So, we'll see. And then sustainability. Well, we invest in things, batteries, battery technology, solar technology, fuel cell technology. The company we invested in Switzerland makes nanostructured materials that are used as electrodes and batteries, which address the whole issue of safety of batteries. So lithium-ion batteries are inherently unsafe. About 30% of the cost of the battery is just to keep it safe. Okay. So if you look at your laptop there, about 30% of the cost of the battery in your laptop is a bunch of electronics that sits on top of it and stops you blowing. And every now and again that goes wrong and you see a little video on YouTube like I'm on fire. Okay. Now the problem with that is that cost, that product recall, the one that was on YouTube, cost, I think it was an Apple computer, but Sony supplied the batteries. It cost Sony something like $700 million. Okay, it completely destroyed their annual figures for a year. So there's a huge driver for that, so this company is being very successful in solving that problem. So governments, well, you know, they're going to invest in skills, knowledge, innovation, and competitiveness. But they also have to regulate the market. And they have to regulate it from the bioethical point of view, right? Now, I thought about whether I'd chip in my tuppence worth on bioethics or not, and I decided, well, you know, I didn't know what I was talking about before, so what's the difference? Here we go, right? I would only offer two things. I mean, I see these debates all the time, I listen to them, and I'm sure, yeah, full of admiration for people who can go through all the sort of the various arguments and counter-arguments and nuances of the imperatives of technology and society and so on. And really, I can only conclude two things, right? I don't think what we are is a sound basis for what we should be. So, you know, if we were meant to fly, we'd have wings. I just don't believe that, okay? Just never accept that argument, okay? On the other hand, I equally don't accept that what can be is not a basis of a sound argument for what we should be. Okay? Now, that might not sound like bioethical language or all the rest, but that's what I think, okay? So that's as far as I've got this whole discussion, right? So one is largely attributed to Hume, and the other is just common sense as far as I'm concerned, okay? And that largely comes out of my experience working and advising governments over the years. You know, it's just not suitable or not acceptable for technologists or doctors or scientists to decide the future of society. It is a much broader issue. So simply saying, well, we can do this to somebody, or we could do that to somebody, is not a sound argument for it should be done. Okay? Or is not a rationale for it should be done, should I say. Sorry, that's all I can say. So, that's it.